Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Happy weekend, ladies and gentlemen, whether you're Eurowing, hurling or escaping from it all. Welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining us from wherever you are. Follow us on Spotify right now, by the way, and you'll get this every Friday. It's a selection of my favourite chats from the last couple of days as a warm ear hug for you. And I hope you're enjoying your weekend, but this will make it even better. So what do we have on this week's episode? We have the art students telling us crazy stories about Ireland's housing disaster and how it's affecting them. Hot geek summer and the films to look forward to amid far too much sport. Plus our visiting critic gets high on cellos. Yes, that's right. So our first chat is with Nicola Byrne and Tadhg Nolan. I really enjoyed this. They're young students at the Irish Art and Design College, the IADT in Dublin. They're from Wicklow and Wexford. And they told us about 66 Voices. It was a really good name. It's a collection of stories that they gathered from their fellow students. And it's all about the world right now. And, you know, we think they're having a mad, lovely rite of passage time in their youth. But no, it's rather grim. It's all renting windowless rooms, sharing beds to get by, stealing bread in some cases, living off the 175 pizzas without the all-night parties that were a staple of past years and past generation student life. Nicola and Tadhg, they brought us directly out of all the stats and graphs and into the actual world, which includes indeed a lot of guilt over parents that have to bail out the students from the high rents. Now, after that chat, you'll hear Olivia Fahey from Geek Ireland, who came into studio to tell us all about the fun that's happening beyond sport and all of it to be had in the cinema and on streaming and so on. How Inside Out 2 is the best and biggest thing this year, and how she loves ennui is her favourite new emotion in that whole series. Horror, how that's doing really badly in the cinema. And we have to get ready for something called the Forquil movie. We've gone from sequels to Forquils, clues in the name there. She tells us everything, so that's an enjoyable chat. It'll lift you again. And at the end of the podcast, you'll hear the mellifluous vocal chords of Raphael Olimpio. He was our visiting critic this week. He joined us from our Cork studio, and he's a spoken word poet or rap artist. And as you know, in the slot, we always bring someone to unknown quarters to them. And for him, he'd never been to live classical music before. And most people have it, let's face it. And he'd never seen a cello being played before. And that brought him to places he didn't quite expect. And his review in general of the West Cork Chamber Music Festival had people melting next to the radio. That's everything in this week's podcast. Listen through to the end, please, so you'll be fully restored to knowledge. And then you can go about your business and then wait for Monday, because I'll be back on the wireless, RT Radio 1, 9 till 10 every weekday. Forever, or until somebody's fired. That's everything. Let's start the weekend podcast. Now, as we know, the housing disaster, as President Higgins has called it, it was created in policies around 2013, 2014, I suppose, and it's affected just about everyone at this stage. Massive rents, benefits a couple of multinational landlord firms, really, but it's increased homelessness, it blocks working people's chances of owning their own home and everything in between. And it's students who are really squeezed for housing, even at the best of times. So how are they doing now? Well, I can tell you 66 Voices is a really brilliant project that our two guests who are in studio with us this morning have worked on. And we'll hear shortly the crazy stories of college students and their housing struggles and how it impacts their ability to pay for stuff, including food. Never mind go out and live the party lifestyle that many of us imagine students do in Ireland. Tadhg Nolan and Nicola Byrne, you're both very welcome to studio. And you're students at the IADT.
Yeah, yeah. In our Institute of Art, Design and Technology in Dublin.
Thank you for breaking that down. Not easy on a Monday morning for any of us, I can tell you. But tell us, Nicola, first of all, how you met, how the two of you know each other.
So we both went to a portfolio course in Gorey School of Art in 2020 after our Leaving Cert, because we needed a portfolio to get into graphic design in IADT. So we met and became friends on that course. And then we ended up becoming friends, and we needed to live or need to find somewhere to live for college. So we ended up living together for the past 3 years. Yeah.
Great. And how long is a portfolio course?
It's a year long. Yeah. So it kind of is up to you if you want to do it like throughout secondary school.
And that's to get entry to the esteemed halls of the IIT.
Yeah.
Where are you both from?
I'm from just outside New Ross in Wexford.
Very good. So it was kind of home, Gory.
Yeah, it wasn't too far. It's 30-minute drive. Yeah.
The polar end. And
I'm from Arklow, so literally next door to Gory as well.
Okay. Yeah. So coming up then to Dunleary, is that a shock to the system? Because you're thinking about housing, I presume.
Yeah. It was kind of mad at the start. You're kind of looking around. But it's funny as well, because like 3 years ago, it was kind of scary to look for somewhere. And like we were trying to find somewhere again to live with each other this year, but it's like 20 times worse, you know, like there's literally nothing going up on Daft, nothing, everything that's going up is coming down pretty straight after, you know. So that was kind of a scare for us as well, and kind of definitely what helped impact this project for us as well.
So when you say the 3 years together, it's hopping around.
Well, no, we've been in the same apartment for the last 3 years, very luckily.
Lucky, yeah.
Well, yeah, lucky in some sense.
Well,
not
it's
lucky
rare.
In sense.
It yes, should be normal, yeah. Shouldn't it?
Yeah.
But it's rare, isn't it?
Is yeah, no, because even throughout the project, most people we spoke to weren't in that situation, and that's what a lot of people want, is to live with their friends, but yeah. It's just not really a chance to do that in Ireland, yeah. Unfortunately. Mm.
What kind of rent can you paying over? Because I know your interest in talking about this. It might sound like a rude question. Tell us about your living arrangements. But it's relevant, isn't it?
Our story is very different, I think, actually, because we were basically living in a basement apartment that we... Mm. It was a two-bedroom apartment that we made four. So there's four of us living there.
Okay, so very, two beds. To the
yeah, room. Pretty much two beds, and we kind of made it work with the other two bedrooms. Damp, mouldy basement, you know, wasn't the best scenario for us. But it was affordable and the location was great. It's like a 10-minute drive to college. Like you could walk to college as well. So we were very lucky in that sense, but definitely wasn't the best environment like living in.
How much was this damp and mouldy two-bed / four-bed?
$625 a month, or it went
each,
up then yeah. To about $650
Oh, so what you're paying
a month.
Each. $650 yeah. Each is yeah. What you paid to share a room.
Well, so it was actually, basically it was like, illegally or legally it was two bedroom, illegally it was three because there was a bedroom with no window, and then there was this kind of spare room that we made into a fourth bedroom basically. So it was kind of, we all did have our own room, but two of the rooms weren't really great.
So it's legally a legal requirement that the, I can't believe I'm saying this, it's legal requirement to have a window in a bedroom.
Yeah. Yeah. And ventilation as well, which we definitely, there was no ventilation.
The rules aren't really like the, there's nothing you can do, is there? You're insecure accommodation, you're hardly going to start saying, this is all.
Yeah, no, like we were like, we're delighted. Yeah, we have yeah. Somewhere to live. So, yeah.
Go away, wow. What have you noticed then? Because the rents just keep going up.
Just yeah. Keeps going up.
That's your experience.
Yeah. So our plan was, like, it worked for us to find two bedrooms, made it four. And we were like, okay, well, this year we'll find a four-bedroom apartment and try live together again, because that was the logical reason, you know, we got on so well with each other. And there's literally two-bedroom apartments gone for, like, $3,000. There's
yeah, like, we were looking at places, and for a two-bedroom, it was about, like, $2,600. Yeah. And we were, that was already more than what we were paying
for the four
bedroom, of us.
Yeah,
so we
yeah.
Were like, this is ridiculous.
And you have two different experiences, Tadhg. How do you pay for your rent and your bills and all of that?
Yeah, so Arklow's an interesting one because I could definitely commute to college. You know, like my brother, he went to IDT as well and he commuted for the 4 years. And I kind of learned through his experience that it definitely wasn't ideal, you know.
You don't get the student experience.
You really don't, no. And like you're waiting for the train, you're waiting for the buses, and like all in all, it's about 3 hours there, 3 hours back, you know.
Oh, wow.
So I was kind of like, I'll try find a solution, you know. I wanted to be independent. So my parents have been really, really supportive of it all, you know, like yeah. They definitely gave me the help when they could, but it was completely my decision to move out. Mm. So I definitely spent a lot of time working throughout college to kind of support myself as well. But yeah, again, like my parents were super, super helpful when they could be.
But you mostly supported yourself.
Yeah, mostly supported myself. Yeah. So I was working about 2-3 nights a week and then weekends as well. So trying to balance that with college work and then trying to, you know, have the social life as well, and then, you know, working as much as I can. So,
did you manage it so far?
Yeah, you could say that. Like,
yeah. Rent swallows up a lot, does it?
It swallows up a lot, and then, you know, the bills and groceries, everything. Yeah. And then, you know, it is that way. Like, I was definitely burnt out. Our course is super, super intense. You know, it's a 9-to-5 in the studio every single day. It's not like a normal college course where you can kind of go to lectures, you know. You're expected to do quite a lot in the course. So it was balancing that as well. It was definitely difficult. So yeah, burnt out point quite a lot throughout the years. But we're nearly there, you know, final stretch.
It doesn't sound like you're saving up a whole lot.
No
saving. And Nicola, you're a shout out to your parents as well.
Yes, yeah. I'm very lucky to be supported by my parents. I'm not like the most like high income family, so it's not like a case of, you know, we're mad wealthy or whatever. It's just, you know, sacrifices are made. There's like, you know, no holidays, that kind of thing. But yeah, just that.
Your parents going without holidays, that sort of thing.
They're grand. But, you know, that kind of thing, that it's like, it's not a case that we're very well off. It's just that we're like comfortable enough that they're able to support me, basically.
And this is quite typical, isn't it?
Yeah, like that. There are a lot of students that are supported by their parents, but I'm sure everyone, like, there's still, like, I'd still have, like, you know, worries about money. And, like, there's always that guilt as well of being supported by your parents. Like, I would nearly feel bad about it and stuff, that I feel like I should be doing it myself. But, like, it is very difficult. So, yeah.
But you have worked part-time as well. You've done...
Yeah, I was working in a pharmacy for the last few years, kind of on the weekends and during summer and stuff like that.
Explain that guilty feeling.
It's just like, I don't know, say like, especially when I see, say, like Tig, he's doing it himself. I feel bad that I should be doing more, kind of thing. But I suppose how my parents see it is they're like, they want me to have the best chance to get through college that I can. And obviously college is tough enough as it is. So they're like kind of happy to support me so that I can have it that bit easier, I suppose. But yeah, I just kind of feel a bit guilty about it, I suppose.
Yeah, I wonder, is that a kind of a typical feeling?
It kind of is. A lot of people we spoke to have the same thing. Even like they live at home in Dublin. They like still like they might be commuting to college, but they still like are struggling even just to work enough to be able to, you know, like pay for their own accommodation or their own like transport costs and stuff like that. That a lot of people still do get support from their parents, but they're like, I'm not going to ask for, oh, can I have 20 euros so I can go have a pint in the pub tonight, kind of thing.
Yeah. That day is gone. And it's also the hard-earned money of your parents and indeed your own part-time work money that's going into this dysfunctional housing system,
yes,
isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
And I should say, for balance, by the way, that opposition parties, people seem to have lost their faith in going by election results in their ability to solve it, because everything just seems to be getting worse and worse. And Nicola, you have a brother who's going to start college soon as well.
Yes, so he's hoping start now next year. So that'll be another to pay for the two of us, you know. Yeah. It's going to be tougher, I suppose. So, yeah.
And the grants, are they not helping?
The grants they're okay. They have quite like tight thresholds, and like I remember last year I missed out on my like getting full tuition fees paid because we were over it by like €100 or something like that. So it's the kind of, they're not very flexible. They're not and in general, so like I can apply for them because I have say like my parents support me, so obviously that's one thing. But people that don't get support from their parents, they can't apply for them because you have to be like over the age of 23 and living outside of home to be able to apply for SUSE independently. Right. So basically, like, say people like Ty can't apply because he's not over the age of 23. That it's like, you know, like some 18-year-olds are putting themselves through college and they don't get that opportunity to apply for SUSE, and they're the people that really need it.
Yeah.
So just things like that, like it's quite like a flawed system in that sense.
There are the gaps.
I definitely, that's something I always face as well, is that like they don't see you as an independent until you're a certain age. And one of the girls I was speaking to about like this project, you know, she completely disconnected from her parents altogether, has no relationship with them, but she has to support herself completely. SUSE doesn't see that as something that
SUSE,
they
don't
recognize
the grant system,
that, you know.
The
grant system,
Student universal.
Like the state goes, there's no way you could be an independent
adult. She's trying to get into contact with her mother to be like, can you sign off this or whatever? And she has no relationship with her mother. So it's literally like, what am I going to do in this situation? I can't afford all of this, you know. Like my parents do definitely support me in that as well. They pay towards my grant because we don't hit the band that gets the full. But it's still the same thing, you know. It's like they don't see independence, you know.
We should say to anyone who's maybe done their certain planning student life, you're enjoying it and having
a
nice
story. Yeah, that was one thing we were afraid of with this project. We're not trying to scare prospective students. We do love college and we love our course. We really do. It's just like to shed light on it, because I think there's a lot of, like the project initially started to educate lecturers about student life, but I think it applies in a wider sense.
Why did you think you needed to tell lecturers what was going on?
It was kind of, we were tasked with it, to be honest. So it was one of our projects at the start of this year, was to educate lecturers on one of the N-Tutor core teams. So N-Tutor is the National Technological University Transformation for Resilience and Recovery, which is...
The fact you laughed halfway through.
It's very short and snappy. So it's like a collaboration across the technological higher institutes and universities to kind of improve learning in colleges. So basically, we were tasked with educating the lecturers on one of their core teams, and that's how this project started.
A good idea.
Yeah.
It's not that it was a crisis that lecturers didn't seem to be able to read the papers. So that's where this project kind of came out of.
Yeah.
Just before we come into the kind of the bad side of things, I mean, is there much time for fun in college courses? I mean, that's sort of rite of passage that we all look to for college life,
don't
we?
That's the thing. It's definitely about trying to find that balance, you know. That's another, I'm going to be negative again here, but a lot of people in our course, especially, they all commute. So that's a difficulty we've kind of had is like making time for each other, you know, like we try to organize drinks or we try to organize functions of some sort, but it's like a 2-hour commute or 3-hour commute. And they're like, oh, well, if I meet up with you guys, I'm going to have to leave at 6 because if I miss my next train, then I won't be able to get home and blah, blah, blah. So that's another thing we've kind of dealt with in our course, especially as everyone's commuting. So
that's more like people in their 30s who can't meet up. Yeah. Well, I have a job and I'm having a baby and getting married and saving up.
Yeah.
So whereas, you know, the college people used to be always ready to go out.
Yeah.
Certain nights you
I
could
think
pick.
In a way, maybe IDT is a bit of an outlier in that sense, in that, like, I know with UCD and stuff, it is a lot more people that maybe live close or like are living on campus. Whereas with IDT, it is a lot more people that are from Dublin, so they commute quite far from different areas of Dublin. Because obviously they couldn't afford to pay rent when they're like, I live in Dublin. It's only a 2-hour commute, but I.
And they have stuck with the guilt of maybe can they go out?
Exactly.
Yeah, obviously it's very tough on them as well. Yeah.
Seem to be spending money that should be going on rent. They're very okay, so you put this experience out and into words, basically. 66 Voices, that's an obvious title because you spoke, was it 66?
66.
Yeah, 66. So graphically, it's kind of the idea of like 6 is like the quotation mark. So it's like 6 and
then
the 9.
Oh, I get it. Yes.
So it's like directly quoting students' experiences and their voice, you know.
Brilliant. I didn't spot that.
Yeah. It's a little Easter egg.
It's a graphic design. It's expected there.
Very good. So you literally go around interviewing and recording them.
Yeah, it kind of all started. I kind of had the idea, so I went to this exhibition in IMA. It's an art gallery in Dublin.
Yeah,
so so there's this exhibition on with Howardina Pindell, and she basically talked about her lived experience as a black woman. Kind of, you know, it really struck me because you hear statistics and you understand that like racism exists in the world, and you know, like obviously it's a very passionate thing, but it's when you hear those stories from people and her
Absolutely,
lived experience it really like left something with me, and I was like, we need to kind of take something away from this, you know, and how can we make this our own. So I think it's when we kind of had a perspective, but we didn't know how to go about it. So we started interviewing a few people and we kind of were trying to make them comfortable. It was a very like long experience of like sitting down with them for 40 minutes, trying to chat some things and trying to get them feeling comfortable enough to kind of talk to us because we were strangers to them, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people were surprised with what they came out with as well. You know, they were kind of telling us things they probably didn't expect to tell a stranger, you know.
It all poured out.
Yeah. So we were recording that and we ended up editing down some of the key points from it and like the key questions then as well that we took away from the experience. And then that kind of continued on and we were like, where do we hit a point where we can kind of stop with this, because it was quite a long process, you know, to make those people feel comfortable.
People suddenly wanted to confess all. Not confess, but to relate everything.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm going to play a little bit of it in a moment, but give us the installation itself. You go into a room and this, you're going to, people
hear
this background. So
the idea is that there'd be, there was 3 frames that kind of created a cube or square that you would enter into this kind of square, and you'd be surrounded by these 3 frames that would have projections on
them.
These
are big, kind of 6-7 foot.
Yes, they're 3 meters wide and 2.5 meters tall. And they are, there's rear projections, so there's 3 projectors from behind and they display text basically. So we like from all of the different interviews we had like so much audio footage, and we edited it down to kind of the really main like snippets, like the key points that really drove the point, and like sequenced the text to it. So the idea is you'd walk into the space and you'd see the text appear, and the questions would come up first. So there's different questions about like, you know, renting, Like, are you under pressure to support yourself financially? What are your like college experiences? Does your financial situation impact how you eat? Are you missing out on the typical college experience due to cost? That kind of stuff. So these are just some of the really main ones we felt were would be great for everyone to hear.
And so you see the quoted answers being projected and so on moving across these boards.
Yeah.
And you'll also hear this.
It's a grand a month for digs, like a box bedroom.
I was living in a construction site the first 3 or 4 months of college. So now I live in the attic together with my friend. It's €1,200 to share a bed.
I would eat pizza mainly because it was €1.75 and that was a whole meal.
Sometimes I steal bread, like a little medieval child.
Today I couldn't spare any money to buy lunch stuff.
I'm not probably getting all like the nutrients I need. I'm just eating like either pasta or like noodles just to like fill me up.
Having to sacrifice some things in my life, like, oh, will I get lunch today or will I go out later and connect with people?
Still use like kids' leave card up to recently.
I'm working during the week. I don't have like as much time as I need really to like write my thesis or like do work or anything like that.
It's present in every single moment and decision of mine. It's like a little demon in the corner of my room or something.
It's a stressful situation because I really want to be independent and not rely on like my parents, but it's a necessity at this point if I want to continue college. Like,
I think that's extraordinary. It is amazing, like you say, when you hear the personal stories.
Yeah.
I steal bread.
Yeah, we had a few of them as well.
A lot of people telling those stories,
this must have been eye-opening even for you.
It really was. Because obviously we have our own experience, but like speaking to other people, and it was amazing how quickly people would tell us very personal stories. And like we nearly became a little bit desensitized to it because we were hearing like constantly hearing awful things for like the few weeks we were recording them. And we were like, people would be like, oh, this is like, I was made homeless. So we're like, okay.
That we I wish we could help. But we
like heard so much that we became like slightly desensitized to it. But no, they were some of them were really shocking, like, and really really like hard to hear.
And that was like something that we definitely felt as well. Like, once people saw the installation, they were in that space and they came away from it, they were like, wow, I don't feel as alone as well. That was a huge takeaway like a lot of students, it's a lived story for everyone, you know.
And so
that
not was necessarily telling each other
exactly. So that was a point we were making, was that like everyone has their own experience. It could be really small to you or it could be really big to another person, but I think that we wanted to get a really wide range of like people living at home, people commuting, people paying ridiculous rent, this and that, even to the smallest things, you know. And every single person who came away from it was like, I'm glad I heard this as well, because you can kind of get in your head a little bit and be like, wow, this is all on me. Like, how am I going to get through this? But I think it's when you hear those other experiences as well, you kind of feel a little bit less alone. You can kind of feel like, well, we're all in this together, you know.
Yeah. As bad as it is.
And like, clearly, like, it's a systematic issue. It's not a like personal issue. That's what a lot of people felt.
When people say they're paying this much to share a bed, do they mean share a bedroom?
No, that was one of the girls we spoke to. Unfortunately, she'd been in digs, and then they were trying to like make her leave, and then she was like, please let me stay. So she ended up moving into the attic, and there was another girl in the same situation. She had been in digs in a different room in that house, and they ended up, like, the landlady was like, the only way you can stay is if you move into the attic. And she only had one bed for them, so they both shared the bed. I think eventually got a second bed, but still it was ridiculous rent even to be having your own bed.
That's insane.
They were sharing a bed and paying the same rent, like €1,200 to share a bed in an attic.
There are no words for that.
I know, though.
We're getting some messages in here. My daughter has just completed 6 years at third level. This has cost more than €150,000 between the fees, accommodations, food, travel, and so on. It's astonishing. My parents partly supported me in college. Whenever they asked me if I was okay, I often lied and said I was fine, even though you're both nodding to that, even though I was sometimes living on bread and water to avoid asking them for more money. That was back in the 90s when the student grant saved us from utter starvation. That's from Frank in Galway. But you're nodding along in 2024, something from 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Does your generation of students, do you feel robbed that, you know, it was easier before?
I like, we don't want to like discredit obviously people that came before us. Obviously, like, it still obviously was bad in the 90s if that's what people were living with. But I think a lot of the point of this is maybe to raise awareness that, like, it's really after getting a lot worse. Obviously, the cost of living, everyone can feel that at the moment. Like, we've had like people in their 30s who are working full time see the exhibition and relate to parts of it. So like, it's obviously everyone, it affects everyone, but I think it's, we're not trying to be like, we have it worse than you, but it's more just to show that like it is really bad. Because I know there is, like, I'm sure some people would be like, oh, those young people, they just want to give out.
There are tons of people who haven't gone to college at all because of housing.
Yeah, of course.
The choices in their courses are picked because of housing. Which we've never had before. You expect it to be poor as a student. You don't expect it to be sharing a bed in an attic and your parents having to pay enormous amounts of money. Can people go to see the installation? Is that is that on the plan, or is that...
So originally, yeah, we've had it in a few different locations. So it started in IDT, and we were funded by NTutor to kind of get the ball rolling with it. So we were very lucky in that sense as well. And then it kind of picked off pretty well. So we went to Dublin Learning City Festival with it as well. So had a launch there with the mayor of Dublin, Doughy. And then
Doughy, former mayor.
And then we went to Crow Park with it as well for NTutor's event.
People have seen it around the place.
It's
a great job. I mean, you must be delighted in one sense that you've got the message out there, and that it's obviously an achievement from an artistic point of view as well. It's a really lovely thing. And 66 voices, now that I understand it, I like the title even more. Listen, thank you both so much for coming in to us. Are you nearly graduated? Or what's your own situation?
We have one more year left. But we just wanted
big final scary year.
We want to say thanks to the staff in IDT that helped us so much. Shirley, Kieran, Sinead, Louise, and then Ali in the workshop. They were a big help. We couldn't have done it without them. And a big thank you to NTutor for funding it as well. And also, you can follow it on Instagram. We're at 66 Voices if you want to follow. We're hoping to continue the Instagram, share some student stories, and potentially develop it into a VR kind of installation.
Virtual reality.
With a headset and maybe... basically, the frames are these massive three-metre wide frames.
They don't travel well.
They didn't. They were quite... difficult to travel when we did. So we're trying to make it a bit more compact. So us with a little headset are hoping to maybe showcase it a bit further.
Enjoy your final year.
Thank you.
And thanks so much for coming in to chat to us, Nicola Byrne and Tighe Nolan. And thanks for everyone at IADT as well. Okay, good luck.
This is the Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1 podcast.
For those not interested in the Mad Sports Festival of the summer, not Euros, Wimbledon, GA Championships, Olympics, Premier League, everything is going on in there. What is the alternative? Could cinema be your refuge? And it's always a surefire way to keep the kids entertained because, of course, the schools are out for summer as well. We don't simply list out films here, okay? We get someone who has passion and a little bit of obsession as well, and that's Olivia Fahey, who's editor from Geek Ireland. Welcome, studio.
How's it going, Olivia?
And because you never really go outdoors at all, do you? Just cinema.
Pretty much. I am like always nearly like nocturnal because it's always just darkness around. I'm just watching TV, watching movies, all the fun things.
No harm at all. By the way, we have to start talking about this enormous hit. It's slightly unexpected, I would have thought, Inside Out 2, a sequel. It's a Disney Pixar, is it?
It is indeed, yes. And actually, it was probably the film that I felt had the most pressure on its shoulders for the summer because, like, the majority of the blockbusters that are coming out this summer, they are sequels or franchise additions. But because Inside Out 1 was so beloved and, like, it became a go-to sort of source for child psychiatrists to help children deal with their emotions as they're growing up and things like that. So it was like properly one of the best things that Pixar has ever done. So Inside Out 2 has a lot to live up to. And even though all the others are sequels or franchise editions, I thought that this one has like the most pressure. But oh my God, has it lived up to it? It's pulled in like 4.5 million euro in the Irish box office alone. It has broken the billion mark in like, I think, 3 weeks since its release. So it's absolutely flying.
It's
and so deserved.
Barbie levels of success.
Even more so, I think, because I think it took longer for Barbie to hit the billion mark.
It did, yeah. And explain the concept again. Little cartoon characters inside the girl's head. She's Riley.
She's Riley, yeah. So now Riley is hitting puberty. So where we met her beforehand, she was dealing with like... trying to bring sadness into her world. She was always so full of joy, and when they moved house, sadness kept trying to like creep in a little bit because she was a bit homesick.
The emotions are characters inside her
they
head.
Are indeed so essentially this time around she is about to start high school. She's gone to this hockey camp because of fans of the first one, remember, she was a big ice hockey player, and now there's kind of a few friendship dynamics that are changing, and she's hitting puberty and all of these new emotions are coming in. We've got anxiety, ennui, embarrassment, you name it, like it's absolutely gas.
There's sport in this.
There is a little bit of sport. A little bit of sport.
We'll have a listen to this. This is great because these are such a clever idea for the sequel. We're introducing new emotions, mm-hmm. who are the characters inside our head, in Inside Out 2.
I'm anxiety. I'm one of Riley's new emotions, and we are just super jazzed to be here. Where can I put my stuff?
What do you mean, we?
Oh, I wish I was as tall as all of you.
Who the heck are you?
I'm Envy. Look at your hair. Oh, yeah, not happening.
Okay, who's this guy?
What's your name, big fella?
That's embarrassment. He's not really big on eye contact or, like, good talking, but he's a really sweet guy.
Well, welcome to headquarters, embarrassment. Oh, we're doing a fit. No. Oh, nope. Going high. Oh, you got a real sweaty palm there, buddy.
What emotion was that?
That's ennui.
On what?
Ennui. It's what you would call the boredom.
Well, come on up here. Ennui. Am I saying right? And why? Oh, nicknames. I'm going to call you Wee Wee.
No.
Is it the best character in it?
I would actually say, personally, I really enjoyed Anxiety's edition, but Ennui is so funny because, like, instead of, like, using the console deck that they have to kind of control Riley's emotions and things like that, it uses an app instead and it's just, like, horizontal on the couch constantly. It's just like, oh, this is so annoying. it is very funny, but I think Maya Hawke was brilliantly cast as Anxiety, and fans of Stranger Things will know her as Robin in the series, so, it's great.
Oh, she's Robin in Stranger Things?
She is, yes. Okay.
And she's a Nepo baby.
She is a Nepo baby. And she was like, if I'm a Nepo baby, I will take the opportunities I get because you know what? I need the work.
Ethan Hawke and...
Uma Thurman's daughter.
Yeah, I don't mean Nepo baby. I mean, you'd have to have talent.
Exactly.
Brooklyn Beckham is the antidote. Shows that Nepo baby doesn't exist. You've got to have talent. We talk about the huge success of that. There are very notable flops, aren't there?
Yes. And I wonder, is it something to do with the fact that they came out so early in the summer? So one of the big surprises for me was Furiosa Mad Max Saga, because that was being billed as one of the biggest hits of the summer.
Massive hype.
And it has kind of it hasn't even broken the top 10 of the year so far. Garfield released on the exact same day, and that outsold it. So that'll tell you what Can't you believe. Need to know.
Yeah. Another Garfield, and that's an animated one, isn't it?
It is indeed, yes.
And The Fall Guy, and that was expected to be big, Ryan Gosling's massive Barbie follow-up.
Honestly, and I'm very surprised that it didn't do any better in the box office, purely because it was so funny. Like, it was a bit stupid in parts, but it was like an action rom-com sort of style thing, and the stunts were absolutely spectacular. So again, failed to break the top 10 so far, and with so many more films yet to come out, it may not even be in the top 20 by the end of the year.
And that's scary, because that was the ultimate date movie, wasn't it?
Yeah,
to the cinema. Are people just not going to the cinema? Are they?
I think that's kind of the kicker. A lot of people are waiting until it comes to streaming to watch a lot of these films. Like, it's actually really difficult to try and get the bums on seats these days. I think a great example of this is Argylle. Now, this was absolutely panned by the critics and really by a lot of audiences as well. I personally thought it was so stupid and I enjoyed it. But at the same time, it made so much money on Apple TV Plus.
Did it?
It was a massive hit, had a load of people sitting at home and putting it on and watching it, and it became one of their biggest films of the year so far.
So people rented it?
Either renting it or streaming it on their streaming service
as
well.
Subscribe to Apple Plus,
So it just depends on what people actually want to go see, and I think this could be like the Kevin Costner new film. I think that could be a great example of a film that people may want to see at home as opposed to go to the cinema to see.
You'd imagine a Western with a big sweeping cinematography and fans of Yellowstone, there's lots of them listening to this show. We're the official show for Yellowstone. I don't know if you know that, Olivia. But I was really excited about this one, but it's just absolutely being murdered by the critics.
A little bit, yeah. And like, Kevin has put a lot of his own money into this. And I think that's
40 million.
40 million.
Is that a lot in his world, even?
Do you know what? I think if they made it for about 120, then you're thinking that that's a third of the budget has gone from his own pocket. So that's a fair chunk as opposed to like this
studio. He's been divorced a few times as well, hasn't he?
Exactly. I think maybe that's why he was kind of holding out on the most recent one, because he was like, no, I kind of need this money. I've already spent this in my head.
But what's amazing is that he kind of seems to have half ruined Yellowstone, because he's not currently in the final season, half season that's coming out in November. Or is he? There's sort of there's a drama going on there in itself, because he went off to make this, devote basically the kind of zenith of his career, essentially, because it's the first big thing he's done since Dances with Wolves.
Yeah, it's like his big passion project for him. Yeah, and I think with the popularity of Yellowstone, maybe he kind of thought that the desire was there for this big Western epic. Yeah. But I think maybe because Yellowstone was a watch at home thing, as is the spinoff is 1923, isn't it, or something like that?
1888. There's three spinoffs now.
It's three of them, my goodness.
There's a 23 as well. But it's Horizon Part 1. It's 3 hours long. Do you know the review that really put me off? Kevin Costner doesn't show up for an hour.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Good to see a Kevin Costner thing. And he's not there for a whole hour, apparently.
Wow.
But Horizon Part 2 comes out in a few weeks' time, in the middle of August.
There you go.
So,
and I think that's another kicker. If you see a part one in a title, a lot of people tend to be like, oh, maybe I'll just wait until the second part comes out and I'll watch the two of them back to back.
There's a third part he hasn't made yet. So that's, you're dead right. So people will wait for the 9 hours down the road to sit down and watch it like
exactly.
A series. Okay, so that's another flop that's happening at the moment.
Yep.
And he's well behind. So things have done very well. You've mentioned Garfield and another Godzilla thing. Are people actually going to see?
They are. And you know what? This one, apparently, I actually didn't see it, but one of my colleagues did. And he was like, this is actually one of the better ones from the MonsterVerse. So this is actually, I was laughing because a lot of the films in the top 10 at the moment are forquels, as I call them. They're like literally the fourth installment to a franchise. This one is the fifth installment to the Warner Brothers MonsterVerse. So we've had a lot of these films already. Ready, but people still seem to have the appetite for them. And I think off the back of Godzilla Minus One's success as well.
That was apparently brilliant. And I couldn't actually see that because they had pulled it from everywhere to allow this film to do well. Now, Godzilla Minus One came out at Christmas, wasn't it? It was Japanese.
It was like Christmas in the US, and then it came out in the New Year over here. So there was like that kind of gap. But like it was made for pennies in comparison to Godzilla and King Kong. And it like won best special effects at the Oscars as well.
Okay.
So, and they had all like little Godzilla figurines with them and everything. So my little nerdy heart was very happy for them.
And that was really good. Godzilla Minus One.
Brilliant. Yes. Streaming on Netflix.
Oh, it's streaming on Netflix now. Oh, the one thing I don't have. Okay. Tell us about the upcoming stuff then, because people are going, right, they've probably seen Inside Out 2 already because it's done so well in Ireland and it came out just before the schools broke up. But what other kid-friendly things that are going to be good?
So the closest one to release is Despicable Me 4. So again, another forequel coming out. And this time Gru, he has a son who, you know, adores his mother, maybe not so much a fan of his daddy, and, you know, ends up bringing the kid along on like his latest adventure. And I just have such a soft spot for the Minions. I just think there's, again, if it's stupid and funny, I'm going to enjoy it. And I just think they have just hit the nail on the head with things that will keep bringing kids back to cinemas. And with what we've seen in like the top 10 so far, a lot of them are the kid-friendly sort of style film. So I think this is probably going to do very, very well in the box office.
Okay. And Despicable Me 4, it comes out on the 12th of July.
Yes, so very soon.
So really good for people who like bright colours.
Yes, exactly.
On the 12th of
July.
Lots
of yellow.
I can't. Is Twisters, that's not going to be kid friendly, is it?
No, that's not going to be kid friendly. So that's going to be a bit more
What else
more
for
adult.
The kids do we have for the summer? Because the summer is usually a good time for children.
It usually is. But you know what? There's actually very little in terms of like the very kid friendly things. And even then, like with some of the Marvel content that they've put out over the last few years, like that's usually been kind of at least 12A, but no, we've got Deadpool and Wolverine, and that's going to be rated R.
That's going to be, that's for grown-ups only.
That is for grown-ups only. It's going to be 18s plus.
Kids are probably watching that on streamers.
Who knows? What people like allow their kids to do in their own home is their own business.
I'm very excited. It's not actually happening in the summer, but Beetlejuice. Is
Can't
the sequel
wait.
To Beetlejuice. And I'm...
Just said it three times. Where is he?
No, I actually did. It was a pause in between. Yeah. But why isn't this happening coming out in the summer? Obviously, they're leaning towards Halloween.
I think that's the kicker. And to me, that makes perfect sense. Because also, the summer can be very jam-packed as well. So you do want to give it some sort of like breathing space. And September tends to be when a lot of like the Oscar bait kind of films start to creep in. So if people don't want to go see something that would be kind of more serious, you know, Beetlejuice is a great option as an alternative.
How long ago was the original?
Oh, it's literally, I think it's 30 years.
Is it? Okay.
It could
it's
be
not,
30
but
years.
But it's not a specific anniversary, I don't think, is it?
No, it's not.
It's such a good... I love the original.
Absolutely brilliant. And I'm so excited to see how the new additions to the cast kind of blend in with the characters that we've already come to know and love. We've got Jenna Ortega's in there. She's playing Winona Ryder's daughter.
And she's in Ireland right now.
She's in Ireland right
As
now,
is
filming
Tim
Wednesday.
Burton.
Yeah.
Yep, Tim Burton. I saw him actually down there. Yeah, just happened to be walking by. He's down around that.
I would love to like sit down and have a coffee with him sometime. I just think he's so... brilliant. Like, I'm actually wearing a Nightmare Before Christmas t-shirt right now. So big fan.
Yeah. And of course, the great thing is, as he's pointed out, because there's a kind of a turn against CGI, isn't there, that he doesn't use CGI, he's used all little figurines and very slow and expensive way of filmmaking.
Exactly. And I think the kind of the realistic side of things, it just makes, I'd say, the edit a bit quicker as well, because when you think about it, bringing it back to Deadpool and Wolverine, they use a lot of live action, like real sets kind of thing. And because of that, they only finished filming maybe September, October last year, and that's coming out in July. So that's a very quick turnaround in terms of like a Marvel film. Usually they could take it up to a year or more. I think Captain America 4 has been in production and post-production for 2 years nearly now.
Because
so
it's basically a cartoon. They have to...
There's probably a lot of SFX, also there's a lot of rewrites that were going on as well. Whereas with Deadpool and Wolverine, clearly they were happy enough and it's done.
And there's not much CGI in that, really.
I'd say there'll be a little bit, but probably just not as much as, Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania.
Oh, yeah, getcha. This gets you excited. The music for Beetlejuice is just fantastic. Danny Elfman, of course, does everything.
Icon. I actually got to see him perform the Nightmare Before Christmas track live in Three Arena before lockdown. So I was like, that was one of the greatest nights of my life.
1988 is Beetlejuice.
Was it in the 80s?
Gina Davis and Alec Baldwin, who's having a bad time at the moment. Here,
don't mention the war.
It's showtime. Oh, is that the line? I can't remember.
It's so iconic.
We are nerding hard on that one.
We really are. I'm very excited. I've even like dressed up as Beetlejuice for Halloween before, so I'm like, do I break out the blazer again?
Okay, did you make up and everything?
I did, yeah. I had green hairspray in the hair and all.
And Michael Keaton is back.
He's back in it. Winona Ryder is back as well. You've got Willem Dafoe, who's going to be playing a kind of afterlife cop kind of thing. Monica Bellucci is in it as well. And I think she's playing Beetlejuice's wife or something along
those
lines.
You know everything. You know everything that's going on.
Hey, obsessed.
come here to me now. There's a new Alien film coming out.
Alien Romulus, yes. So this is being billed as a standalone film.
All right.
But it kind of falls into the timeline of between Alien and Aliens, and I hope I have that right now.
All right, so back to the 70s.
Kind of, yeah. But it can stand on its own 2 feet is what they're trying
to say.
Between the John
Hurt and Sigourney Weaver. Isn't that what that's where you're placing it?
Pretty much, yeah. So it's
and Ridley Scott's directing it.
No, it's not Ridley Scott. It is, the name has escaped me. Maybe one of your listeners will kindly text it into us.
She doesn't know everything, it seems. Fede Alvarez, director of The Evil Dead, 2013. Thank God for briefs. Things written down for you. Alien Romulus, that's the 16th of August. Speaking of big movies, and speaking of Ridley Scott, he has directed this Gladiator sequel.
He has.
Irish Interest Alert.
Paul Mescal.
This is his first blockbuster, isn't it?
Yes, and it's the first images actually were just released yesterday through Vanity Fair. So we actually got a proper look at what the film is going to look like. I'd say the trailer's probably not that far behind it either. And I've actually been quite nervous for this film. I've been very much looking forward to seeing it, but also like it could be absolutely awful, but it could be absolutely brilliant. So from looking at the images, it definitely seems to have the same vibe that we saw in the original Gladiator film. We get a little bit more information now on what the storyline is going to involve. So it's been confirmed that Paul Mescal is playing Lucius, who was his grandfather used to be the emperor, and he's the son of Lucilla. But she has sent him away to Northern Africa to grow up away from the Roman Empire.
Right.
And then like the conquerors come knocking on the door once he's kind of grown up and he has a wife and a family. And this general ends up arresting him, throwing him into the arena. And then that's going to be the first time that he gets to see his mother again. And lo and behold, she's standing up there in the audience, looking down upon her son, not realizing it's her son. And she's there with her lover, who just so happens to be the general who has put him there in the first place. So I'd say exactly. So I think that's going to be kind of our core
plot,
I think.
A lot of hype on that one, isn't there?
Big time. And now it's going to
live up to Russell Crowe and Joaquin Phoenix.
Yes, so much to live up to. But now it's also going to be coming out on the same day as Wicked Part 1. So I think they're trying to push a new Barbenheimer on us now with this kind of dual release thing. So I'm not sure how that's going to go down.
Slappy musical versus Paul Mescal fighting baboons, according to some of the reports.
Yeah, baboons and Pedro Pascal.
And is Barry Keoghan, did he appear in that in the end?
No,
or did he pull out?
So he had to pull out because he went off to film Bird instead, which got rave reviews at Cannes, actually.
Yes,
so.
But anyway, that is lots to get excited about as well. And we didn't even mention Joker. There's lots of stuff in the autumn. We'll have to get you back in, Olivia, to talk about what's coming then in the autumn. But that'll get people excited away from sport anyway for
exactly
for the
plenty
next
to see.
Future. Where can we keep up to date again? Geek Ireland.
Geekireland.com and then at Geek Ireland on social media.
Perfect. Olivia Fahey, thank you so much and enjoy.
This is the Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1 podcast.
Now it is Friday. It's time for our visiting critic, where we ask someone who's not a traditional, non-professional critic to review something, an event go out for us out of the normal comfort zone. And this week, Raphael Olimpio. He's a rap artist, spoken word poet, and he's live from Cork. Good morning to you, Raphael.
Morning, Oliver. How's it going?
Not so bad at all. Come here, you're the rap artist, spoken word poet. You presumably like classical music, but you've never gone to see it live. Is that fair to say? Where?
Yeah. I've listened to bits here and there. I listen to them particularly when I'm going on like long trips, traveling. Calms me down, so it has that calming effect on me. I've also delved into it a little bit. I've been introduced to Evelyn Grant and Gene Kelly, who has played a harp for me for one of my spoken word pieces. But yeah, like you said, I've never actually been to a classical concert at all.
Never really occurred to you either?
No, never at all. So yeah.
Well, that's why we like giving new experiences to lovely people, Raphael. So we sent you to the West Cork Chamber Music Festival, which is still running. It's running until Sunday. A new experience for you?
Yeah. Didn't know what to expect at all. But you know what? I've listened to bits, as I said. The only kind of classical artists who are legends are Beethoven and kind of Mozart. They're the only people I kind of knew of.
You're speaking for the rest of the country and the rest of the world there, yeah.
So I went in not knowing what to expect. And the first person I guess I seen was Peter Vespelvi, who's a cello player. And again, it's funny because I went home talking to a few of my friends about it, and I mentioned like four instruments in one sentence that I'd never really kind of mentioned before. Yeah. So the cello player was the kind of my first kind of opportunity to see. He was a solo act, and he didn't utter one word. He literally did not say one word. He was introduced and he came on stage and he just played. And I didn't know what a cello sounded like. I seen an instrument with four strings and I was like, oh yeah, should be grand. Started playing. And then I heard like the different elements of it, the bassy sounds, the brighter sounds. And it had such like variety in just a four string instrument. And he played it with such kind of finesse. And I sat there and I felt like I was brought on a journey.
Yeah.
And I'm someone like, I'm a wordsmith. I use words to kind of engage with the audience and really kind of paint a picture. And he did that with just sound. And I was kind of blown away by that. I mean, it was an hour. Initially I was like, can I sit here for an hour listening to just the cello? And yeah, I could have listened to it for the whole day.
Is that right?
Yeah, literally, because I started like, he's playing like a soundtrack to my life right now. Those parts where it's like the emotions were really, really getting there. And I was, the funny thing is I was wearing a smartwatch as I was listening and my heart rate was like down very low, like lower than usual because I was so calm listening to it. And I'm someone that struggles a little bit with social anxiety now and again.
Yeah.
And I just felt it all go away. And I was truly inspired. I had words kind of come to me as well as I was listening. And he finished his piece and kind of went off.
Never said anything.
Didn't say anything again.
And listen, after an hour of cello, some people would think that's a tall order for them.
Yeah.
As I'm sure you did as well. But this sounds like it's done something to you.
Definitely. Literally, I've been converted. Like, I'm a classical music listener now. I'm a fan of Peter Vespelvi. I literally looked him up when I got home because, first of all, I wanted to see what he sounded like because that was something that intrigued me. I was like, what does he actually sound like?
Yeah, his voice, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I was listening to a few interviews and he was talking about like stage fright and all this. And I was like, there's no way he experienced stage fright.
Stage fright, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it was interesting. Then
and you went to more.
I went to more, yeah. I listened to a young group called the Sonic Quartet. They had more like kind of more instruments in their set. There was the cello, two viola players and a violin player. It's so funny all those kind of instruments coming out of my mouth because I never say all them before. But
and Prokofiev, you're just going around randomly saying.
Yeah, literally.
So there's a cello, two violins and a viola.
Yeah, yeah. So there was a lot more energy, as you'd expect with, I guess, a lot more instruments in the set. These were like a young group, and I work with young, kind of young people in the community. I do music workshops.
Yeah.
And this group, they were like, I talked to one of them and they were just finishing their leaving cert. They're like 19, 18, 19, 20. And they sounded so professional. I couldn't tell the difference between like Peter, who I feel like, I don't know, looking at his history, he's been playing for over 40 years. And then there was this young group who have been playing since they were seven. But the energy and the kind of synchronicity between them as they were playing was incredible. And they told a story as well. I actually got to hear them speak because prior to them performing, they gave, a little insight to what their pieces were about. Mm. One of their pieces was kind of about being stuck, having a thought and kind of being stuck in that thought and how that thought kind of transcends and progresses and you get more thoughts until all your thoughts kind of diffuse. Mm-hmm. So they play that true sound. And I also have ADHD. So when I get a thought, these thoughts kind of transpire. And it was just like, again, I was just like, I get you.
Yes.
I know what you're saying, but it's true music with no words again.
This is a rave review. You are definitely going to our RT Lyric FM from now on forever. Raphael, you mentioned you're working with kids and some of the kids are in direct provision, isn't that right? And,
yes.
And that is your experience. That's how you came to Ireland many years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
The first
yeah.
experience of Ireland, I should say, was direct provision.
Yeah,
What age were you?
So I was about 6 years old when I first arrived. And
that's about 24 years ago?
Yes, yeah, okay. About 24 years ago.
How long did you spend there?
Just under 2 years. So yeah, I was just turning 8 when we left and then we moved to the city. So I was in a very rural area, quite isolated. And I guess that's where my love for music kind of began,
really?
Due to the isolation. And also, I guess initially I was in, whilst in direct provision, English wasn't necessarily my first language. I had a little bit of English. And I was watching a lot of telly. My mom spoke French and Ewe, which is a tribal language from Togo, which was what we spoke at home. But then when we came to Ireland, my mom wanted me to be kind of proficient in the English language and stopped speaking French and Ewe to me. So I did everything in my power to get better. And hip hop was a tool, I guess, I used to improve my English. And I used to listen to like Eminem and listen to his backstory and how he used a dictionary to kind of build on his vocabulary. Mm-hmm. So I got a dictionary and a thesaurus and I'd kind of look for rhyme words and get to understand words better. And over time, I did hip hop for a long time. And over time, I've always loved storytelling. I've always loved
This is where you've developed to.
You have
a fascinating story. I wish we had more time, and I think we'll have to get you in again to talk about it because you have a fascinating story, and I think it's really relevant to the national conversation in Ireland now. Mm. I want to just let you go by congratulating you on your degree in occupational therapy, isn't it, from UCC?
Yes, yes. Just finished up, just graduated.
Perfect.
Absolutely delighted.
I'm so sorry I have to let you go, but I also want to tell people, because you've been totally converted, the West Cork Chamber Music Festival finishes on Sunday. More events today, westcorkmusic.ie. Raphael Olimpio, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a lovely weekend.
Me.
Bye-bye. There you go. That was everything. We always give you things to dwell upon of a weekend. It is the end of the podcast as you know it. If you have interesting stories and things you think we definitely should know, you can pop us an email anytime at all. It is oliver@rte.ie. Simple as that. Happy weekend to you all. Farewell. Thanks, Slán.